everybody, and welcome into episode number 373 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
Coming to you from three different states across the country as per usual, since we've been broadcasting these again. We got some interesting facts for you to play along with, learn some stuff, impress the people that you're living with, or call your mom about it. I don't know. Whatever you want. Learn some stuff.
This is week 8 of being at home.
lots of times to find interesting facts. I actually researched mine based on things that I've never seen before.
Ooh.
Okay.
Would you like me to go first? Should I kick us off?
Go for it.
I don't think you can leave a cliffhanger like that just out there and go, okay, well, we're going to go to Nick.
Okay, that's fair. So I'll kick us off. And I wanted to research things that I had never seen before. In my brain, I know that flamingos can fly, right? You guys know that flamingos True. Can fly. People have, like, you know, you kind of seen them kind of flutter across the water there. It almost looks like they're running across the water at zoos or, you know, Florida, wherever you've been. You've seen flamingos, yes?
Yes.
I have seen the Lion King.
Yeah. Have you ever seen flamingos actually fly?
Like a flock of flamingos at 10,000 feet or something?
Yeah.
No.
Can't say that I have.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't either. And that is the basis of my interesting fact, because I was really curious about, okay, are flamingos, or do they just fly just above the water? Do they actually fly these long distances? What can flamingos do? So I looked up, what's the top speed of a flamingo when it's in flight? What's the top speed of a flamingo in flight?
Is that a laden or an unladen flamingo?
I don't know the answer to that question. Yeah, so this is, for the record, I did a bunch of different sources here. This is actually from SeaWorld's website and their marine biologist team. But it's pretty consistent across the board at other flamingo-related groups. But what is the top speed for a flock of flamingos in flight?
Is it a flock of flamingos?
Yeah, it's a flock or a single bird. I mean, the flock of flamingos is still flying the same speed that a bird is flying.
No.
I was more curious about the collective noun.
Yes.
Yes. It is a flock of flamingos. Yes.
Incorrect. Incorrect. It is a flamboyance.
Oh, that it is a flamboyance.
Okay. That is a group of flamingos. Yes. But when they're actually in flight, it is a flock because they are birds.
Fine.
So, sorry. That's your bubble.
Right. So, Michael, the fastest animal on the planet is actually a bird. It's the peregrine falcon, which I believe hits velocities of up to 240 miles per hour when in a dive. So, given that a flamingo is also a bird, I'm going to say that it's less than that, yet still very high.
Okay. Top speed. Here's the thing, though. I definitely haven't seen flamingos fly. I feel confident in their ability that I haven't seen flamingos dive either.
Well, they have to get to the ground somehow.
But if they're not all that high up to start with.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and the diving for the peregrine falcon is like he's or she is seeing some prey and they're trying
to hunting for
that as quickly as possible. The flamingos, they just kind of scoop around in the mud. They eat some mud. Their bills kind of sort through that little mud, and then they eat the little crustaceans, which, you know, give them their pink pigment color in their feathers.
So my analogy isn't great. I get it.
But your logic is sound. I think it is. I think I agree with you that it is slower than 240 miles an hour.
Yes. See? Yeah, I got there. That's the point is the logic is sound. I think this is one of those. And then, like you said, flamingos. Okay, so if they're not diving, how do they get down? We're experiencing water landing, but that's okay because this is a seaplane, so it all works out. I don't know, Michael.
Okay, so I was thinking about it from a land animal speed. So cheetah is, if memory serves, like 60 miles an hour.
That sounds right. Mid 60s, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to say less than that. I was going to say 25 miles an hour. You wanted a miles an hour?
Yes, please.
Okay, yeah. I'm making sure you don't want meters per second or anything silly. I'm going to say 25.
All right. What's the formula for terminal velocity? Because I think that might be the top speed of a flamingo.
Bear with me just a moment.
I don't know where you're going to end up, but I'm sure it will be at the inevitably the correct answer.
Well, it's meters per second. Per second. Isn't that terminal velocity? Can I use Google to calculate terminal velocity?
I don't know how that would help you. I'm really just trying to ask how fast a flamingo flies. So
I have the NASA page. And it looks more complicated than that.
Okay. All right. Well, in that case, I'm just going to throw out a number and say, I mean, it's not going 200 miles an hour, right? That's ridiculous. But I'll say it's doing like 65 or 75. I'll say 75. Faster than a cheetah because it's airborne, but not anywhere near actual fastest animal.
Gotcha. Okay. Both of you have guessed. Michael is definitely closer. So just for your reference, falcons, their average speeds just flying, you know, not in a dive are like 65 to 70 miles per hour.
Okay.
So they're about the same as a cheetah would be. But, you know, since birds are flying, it will look and feel a lot faster than, you know, land creatures. Ducks and geese can go really that fast as well. Horses are like 45 to 50. I'm just trying to give you guys the range so you can see what's going on. Deer can run at 5 to 40 miles an hour.
I don't like the fact that she keeps going down and hasn't yet gotten to flamingo. It does not bode well for my answer.
Yeah, a grizzly bear can run 30 to 35 miles an hour. And that's about the range of a flamingo's flight. So 30 to 37 miles per hour. The flamingo flies.
Let me get this straight really quick. You had this list and the flamingo was the one that caught your thing. What I heard is a grizzly bear can run 35 miles an hour, and that is terrifying.
Yeah. Well, that's the old adage, right, Michael? I don't have to run faster than the grizzly bear. I can't. I just have to run faster than you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like the squirrel, you know how fast squirrels are, but they're only about like 10 to 12 miles per hour. But the flamingo, about 37 is the highest of a flock and what they can fly. And I have my bathroom curtain has flamingos on it. So maybe that was my inspiration for getting this fact, in addition to figuring out something that I don't know. And they actually fly about 15,000 feet in elevation. So they're about 2.8, you know, almost 3 miles up in the sky, which would make sense as to why you don't ever really see flocks of flamingos, because they're very, very far up there.
Huh.
And to put that into context, the average skydiving, if you would go skydiving, it would be about 14,000 feet that you would jump out of a plane, unless you were me and it was the last flight going out for the season and the crew decided, we're just going to go up to 16,000 feet. Legally, we're only allowed to take you up to 15,000, but we're going 16,000 feet today. And we're like, right. Well, we're already on this plane and I'm tied to you. So I guess this is happening.
And what?
There's not a lot of no in that situation.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, what's which skydiving company was that?
I'm kidding. And very purposely, I don't remember the name, but I had a great time. I went twice, didn't tell my mom about it, came back, landed, and said, hey, just by the way, I went skydiving today. Everything's cool. I'm on the ground.
Pass me that information. It's one of my weight loss goals is when I get to a certain level that I want to go skydiving.
Do it. It's great.
Nope.
I don't need to do it again, but went twice, and it was enough. But I, unfortunately, while I was skydiving, did not see any flocks of flamingos flying 37 miles per hour nearby in Pennsylvania at the time.
Right. Well, speaking of things flying through the air.
Ooh.
All right.
So I've like Lindsay, I'm getting all of my inspiration for my interesting facts from things that are lying around my house, because, you know, those are really the only things I get to look at anymore. So I was doing a crossword puzzle. And I started thinking about, I know we've asked questions about the origins of the crossword puzzle before in our trivias, and probably on the podcast as well. But I was thinking about the New York Times specific crossword puzzle, because that's the app I have on my phone. So which U.S. historical event is the reason for the inclusion of the crossword puzzle in the New York Times?
A historical event? Ooh, okay. I didn't know. I don't know the origin of crossword puzzles. Make me feel like an idiot, which should surprise no one that listens to this podcast regularly. But they were never quite my cup of tea, except in like the Highlights magazines of yesteryears.
Oh, Highlights.
Okay, so Michael, what do you think?
So my immediate thought was that it's an addition by subtraction situation, where the New York Times, in this case, thought they were going to be printing something. It ended up not being the case, and they needed to fill it with something.
Okay.
So I'm going to say World War One.
Okay.
I'm going to say World War One because because what I am thinking is they were originally going to use that for that space for the Olympics.
Ah. Okay.
And because there were no more Olympics, there were no Olympics being held because of the war, they already had the layout or whatever, and were like, crap, we need to fill it. Put in the crossword puzzle.
Okay.
I have no idea if that's anywhere close to right.
I love the mindset.
I got to be honest, if somebody told me this in a bar and said it with enough confidence, I'd believe it.
Yeah.
Michael, yeah, I mean, I'm believing you. I'm like, wow, World War One, that's a great guess. I mean, I know the New York Times has been around for a very, very, very long time. And something in the back of my brain says that the crossword was added in 1940 something. But I don't know if that is just my brain of facts that have, I don't know if that is actually the New York Times crossword puzzle or like a specific New York Times a crossword puzzle special contest that they threw, but something in my brain says 1940s. So my initial guess was going to be like Pearl Harbor, but why would they put, it would seem kind of weird for them to put something that was, you know, deemed fun after this surprise attack that launched the U.S. into the Second World War. But maybe that's why they did it, to prove a distraction and not all of the death and destruction that was coming to America. So I'll say Pearl Harbor because, as we learned in trivia, it's best to just go with your gut, even if it has no real rhyme or reason. But I also could be very wrong, and I wouldn't be surprised if this was some sort of pandemic thing, and it was like the pandemic of 1918, and they they tried to keep people home by doing this crossword puzzle. That wouldn't also surprise me. So, but I'm going to say Pearl Harbor.
You guys should write books, because the stories that you are creating are very entertaining to me. I really like the concepts, the backstories and the character development that you do. I really enjoy going through all of this. It makes a lot of, both of your answers make an incredible amount of sense.
If you ever want to play a game of Mad Libs, you guys have, you know, Mad Libs.
Uh-huh. I remember Mad Libs.
Yeah, I'm really fun to play Mad Libs with. So, or at least I assume that I am.
So I'm doing a little bit of research just to see where the years are on some things. I don't believe, Michael, that they canceled the Olympics around World War One. I think that was World War Two.
Okay. I thought they had done both, and I had an internal coin flip about whether I was gonna say World War One or World War Two. they did. It looks like 1916, they canceled the Summer Olympics.
Okay.
Well,
They canceled 1940, both of them, and 1944 for World War II.
Right. By the way, all of those are Summer Olympics. There was no Winter Olympics until later.
I'm showing 1940 and 1944 Winter Olympics.
Interesting. Does that matter?
This is Wikipedia, and it links to nothing.
Okay.
The first Winter Games were 1924.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So 1924. All right. Well, yep. There you go. So, 1916 was canceled. Right. And then 40 and 44 were canceled. Correct. And then 2020 were canceled.
Postponed currently.
Yeah, postponed currently. Okay, so, but anyway, Michael, great story. It was not correct. Lindsay, the concept of it being related to the pandemic and the Spanish flu in the 1918s is an excellent guess and a wonderful story, and ties in perfectly to the world of today. Also not correct. Your long drawn out concept of having something fun to distract from the terrible thing that was Pearl Harbor
not that long, John. It was like four sentences.
Is right on the money. That is exactly correct. Because of the tragedy of Pearl Harbor, the editor-in-chief of the New York Times, who had previously discarded the concept of the crossword puzzle in the newspaper as being frivolous and a way for stupid people to exercise their brains, came back and said, well, we need something fun, so let's go ahead and put it in. So in February of 1942, they put the crossword puzzle in, and it has stayed in ever since.
Oh, so, my gosh.
Congratulations, Lindsay, on the nose with Pearl Harbor.
Okay, well, I was going to say just World War II in general, but then I was like, well, if he's talking about a specific event, it was probably, I mean, when you're talking about specific events with World War II, it would be Pearl Harbor.
From the U.S. perspective, anyway.
Well, yeah, from the U.S. perspective, which luckily is 99.99% of our We Don't Know Either listeners.
Yes.
/ we are all Americans. But cool. Okay, go me blindly guessing. And again, the lesson is stick to your gut, because I was not confident at all. And if that was a wager question, I would have maybe wagered like 2 to 3 points.
And I think that's our secret phrase is stick to your gut.
Ooh, stick to your gut. All right, the secret phrase that means nothing, but maybe someday it will. So stick to your gut. Cool, I like it. Stick to your gut, secret phrase. So Michael, you need to segue here to wrap up the show.
I don't have a politically correct segue.
Oh, hey boy.
This is where I'll just input a beep that runs on for about 90 seconds, and then you go, and that's how I made my segue.
I had it better off of the flamingos, because I was
okay. Go ahead. I'll say something about
speaking of things that fly.
Oh, okay.
So I ran across this article in which a very, very well-known actor converted his ranch in Mississippi to a bee sanctuary. So it's tough to make it an interesting question, but the story behind it's super interesting. Basically, who's the actor?
Is that all the information we have to go on?
He is an actor, film director, and philanthropist. He is tied to some nature documentaries that you may know.
Brett Favre.
Yeah. By the way, if there was a nature documentary and Brett Favre was the narrator, I'd be in immediately.
Right. That's Brett Favre is literally the only. Is he from Mississippi? Where does he live? So.
Is it Mississippi or Arkansas?
Are those two different places?
I think they might be. You are correct. He's from Gulfport, Mississippi.
Right, yeah. Brett Favre, I think, is the only celebrity that I can name that is from Mississippi.
Let me look to see if he is, but...
Associated with Mississippi?
Well, this actor has a ranch in Mississippi.
Okay.
I don't know if he's from Mississippi or not. Let me look.
And you said he narrated things?
Yeah, he's a big narrator.
Okay, oh, so it's well, then it's Morgan Freeman.
There you go. Morgan Freeman, born in Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay.
Yeah, but he had this 124-acre ranch in Mississippi, converted the entire thing into a full-time bee sanctuary, imported 26 beehives from Arkansas. Okay. He encourages population growth by bee-friendly vegetation like magnolia trees, lavender, and clover on the land, and has no intention of harvesting any of the honey or disrupting the hives.
Huh. Well, good for us for guessing it, though I wouldn't have had any other guesses beside Morgan Freeman as soon as you said narrator, especially with nature documentaries.
Right.
What? Lee Schreiber may have been an option there.
No, not really.
It's all just right. Like you gotta, if it's a presidential one, just guess staff. Go with your gut.
It was tough to make it an interesting question, but the backstory on it's super interesting.
Yeah, okay. No, bees are important.
And I guess it started as a hobby, but now there's a 124-acre bee sanctuary in Mississippi now.
Sounds good.
Yeah, my brother keeps bees. He is an apiary, and he's got like 4 or 5 hives, so I've started to learn from him just talking about the work and the effort that goes into keeping these things. And I think I learned the other day that the NYPD has 2 specific bee-related officers that, like, anything that's, like, bee-related crimes, they'll send out.
And they have their own, yeah.
Yeah, and there's, like, a lot of buildings in D.C. and New York, too, that have bees on top of buildings and things, which is super interesting.
Okay.
I don't know. I think bees are important.
No, they are very important. By the way, list of celebrities from Mississippi. Elvis Presley, Britney Spears, Oprah Winfrey, James Earl Jones, Haley Williams, Lacey Chabert, Sam Cooke, Jerry Rice.
Now, which Sam Cooke, though?
Sam Cooke, the singer, not Sam Cooke, the person who runs our social media.
Right, but as I understand, there are two Sam Cookes, aren't there? Or am I wrong? Better singers.
Oh, well, no, it's the Sam Cooke that you know, then.
Okay.
We are just about out of time, so let's wrap it up here, guys. We talked about Mississippi celebrities, bees, and a lot of flamingos and crossword puzzles. So thanks for joining us. We will see you next week. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
And we don't know either.
Bye.